The best in Bitcoin made audible. I'm Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What's up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we're going to be doing a short read today. This one's on Bitcoin Magazine, but I think it's going to spark a lot of discussion. I probably am going to have to explain some things, but it's also really short, so we'll get through it really quick. But it's about discrete log contracts and the idea and how we could potentially implement a lot of smart contract functionality onto Bitcoin and or the Lightning Network. In the future, and what that might actually look like, what those mechanisms might be. A quick thank you to Hexa Wallet for supporting the show. They're a really fascinating wallet, and one of the cool features, I know I mentioned in yesterday's episode that you kind of have a checking and a savings account, and the savings has built-in multi-sig, but one really cool thing about the checking account, or just the wallet in general, is that it's seedless. And this is a trend that I think is really important, and I love some of the clever things that people have come up with to make this the norm. And they've actually used Shamir secret sharing. So they've broken up the key itself into a 3 of 5. So like multi-sig, except it's still just one key. And then you can have other people in your contacts, you can have other devices, and you can save like a local, just like a PDF backup of any of these pieces. And all you need is 3 of the 5 to restore your whole wallet. That's something else that I think I've only seen a Hexa wallet do. So I recommend checking this out definitely at hexawallet.io, or of course you can get it on the Google Play or Apple App Store. So let's get into today's read. This one is from Bitcoin Magazine, written by Ben Carman from SherdBits, and it's titled, DLCs Are on Bitcoin, Bringing New Functionality and Major Potential. Bitcoin has been critiqued by those in the altcoin community for the past few years over its inability to host smart contracts. But recent work from developers at SherdBits, Crypto Garage, and Atomic Loans, along with efforts from some independent contributors, on discrete log contracts, or DLCs, is bringing smart contracting to Bitcoin and will quell some of these critics. DLCs are uniquely positioned to bring smart contracting to Bitcoin using Oracle contracts that are much more private and scalable than previously thought possible. What are DLCs? Discrete log contracts are Bitcoin-based contracts that use one or many Oracle signatures for enforcement. The original proposal for DLCs was made by Taj Dryja in 2017 and later redesigned to make them more scalable and private by using something called adapter signatures. DLC Oracle contracts allow for users to make a Bitcoin transaction contingent on an Oracle signature. Using DLCs, Bitcoiners can make bets based on events to which the Oracle is attesting. Last week, we saw one of the first of these done by SherdBits founder Chris Stewart and creator of BTC Pay server Nicola Doria betting on the results of the US election. After a recent DLC redesign, they were changed to use a 2 of 2 multisig that pays out directly to a user's wallet instead of paying to a tweaked public key. This old design required a penalty mechanism, similar to that of the Lightning Network, which made it take more block space and be less private. This redesign is made possible by using adapter signatures and making the adapter point based on the Oracle's expected signature. What this basically means is that each party gives each other invalid transaction signatures that can only be made valid in conjunction with the Oracle signature. To make this recent bet between Stewart and Doria possible, a lot of progress has been made in developing a standard for DLCs, as well as building software according to these standards. DLC developers have been working on this standard heavily since the beginning of this year, Along with this specification, they have been building compatible software. So far, there are four major implementations being worked on: Bitcoin S, NDLC, Rust DLC, and CFD DLC. The future of DLCs. The teams working on DLCs have lots of plans for the future of the technology. Today, DLCs have only been implemented for on-chain transactions. One of the most obvious improvements for DLCs would be to put them on the Lightning Network. There are two planned ways to put DLCs on Lightning. One is by making them only usable between parties who already have Lightning channels open between one another, which could be done today, but would require a lot of work done by the different Lightning implementations to add support for DLCs. And this could be obsoleted by the second way to do Lightning DLCs. However, there are some caveats. The second way to do Lightning DLCs likely won't be possible until after Taproot is activated, but it would allow these DLCs to be routed across a network and would remove the requirement to have a channel with a user's counterparty. However, this setup requires barrier escrows, which have no known major implementations. There are other general improvements to DLCs that can be made possible in the future as well. One major idea is to give the user the ability to use multiple oracles for a given contract instead of just one. This would allow users to distribute trust between multiple oracles instead of having a single point of failure for their contracts. And other small improvements can be made come Taproot. With Taproot, we can make multi-sig transactions look like everyday single-sig transactions. Applying this to DLCs, we can make them have a smaller on-chain footprint and make them look like any other standard single-sig transaction, thus saving users on fees and privacy. DLCs are a pivotal new way to bring smart contracting to Bitcoin, and we are extremely excited to see continued development with them. If you are interested in knowing more about DLCs, check out SherdBit's blog. And if you want to come contribute, check out the DLC specification repo. This is a guest post by Ben Carman, a developer with SherdBits. Opinions expressed are entirely his own and do not necessarily reflect those of BTC Incorporated or Bitcoin Magazine. I can't read the disclaimer very well today. So I told you that was a short one, but there's actually quite a bit to unpack here. And if this is kind of your first introduction to discrete log contracts, I have to admit you, it probably doesn't sound like a lot right now, but there's something really fundamental and really interesting happening here. And I definitely recommend going to the SherdBits blog. I've actually had like 20 different of their pieces, like on their blog in my list to read. And there's always one of two issues. One, it always seems like they're just a little bit too technical for the show, or they're too brief. They just kind of hit one basic little concept. So I go back and forth as to whether or not I want to dig into them, but they are an amazing resource. I've thought about reading the Discrete Log Contracts series. Like, there's actually a part 1 through 4 about discrete log contracts. But I think that's actually what we're going to go over here in Guy's Take. So I really kind of want to dig into this concept and what's possible, because at first it might not seem like a lot there. You know, the fact that you can just have an oracle signing with an agreement and, you know, it pays out. It kind of sounds just like a standard multisig, right? Well, it's a very different mechanism, and it is not just a standard multisig, and I want to get into why. So maybe a good way actually to explain it is to kind of hit the general, like Matt O'Dell recently made like a couple of bets. I think one of them was about BitBlock boom, and I think there's another one about the Bitcoin price and maybe the U.S. election, like with American HODL, and then there was like one with Gary Lelanders. I don't know. I can't remember exactly all the ins and outs, but basically there has been, and this is something that's relatively common in Bitcoin, that you set up a kind of like a 2 of 3 multisig, and you have this third party come in and have a key in the interaction. And this is something, you know, you see in like Unchained Capital and these like custodians custodians without being custodians because they don't have control over the coins, or arbiters in agreements, or the marketplace itself is like a third key in like darknet markets and decentralized exchanges and all of these things. Like, it's a very common way to distribute the trust of the arrangement by having a third party be an independent arbiter as to whether or not it should settle to A or to B, or whether or not the transaction went through for the good, whether the good was delivered, whether the bet, the price went up or the price went down, or BitBlock boom happened or it didn't, or Biden got elected or Trump got elected, et cetera, et cetera. But there are a few major problems with this setup. One is that it's not really, you could arguably not call it a smart contract. It's not something like the participant or the arbiter has to be specifically involved, and they are a signer with anyone and everyone that's related to this agreement or related to this bet, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's not something where two parties can determine an outcome and independently have a bet on it. It's where some institution or some trusted third party is being a trusted third party to settle it for the group of people. So you have to go to find an outsider who both parties can trust to settle a dispute honestly. And they have to interact. They have to have their keys. They have to sign every single one. And you have a two of three. You know, you have this very obvious script on Bitcoin as to what's going on and which signatures are involved. And that has a lot of limitations. And what are just kind of the problems with smart contracts in general, right? Like talking about, like, let's just consider like smart contracts on Ethereum, these yield and swap contracts and all of this crap. Like, you know, what is all this stuff that's going on? Well, the idea is that these things are written entirely in the scripting language. So the scripting language has all of these different attributes and all of these things. So you write out five different paths and routes and fail safes and all this stuff and all this scripting language. And then you post it, you actually broadcast it to the Ethereum chain. And then this open contract is just available for all to see. And they're big, they're data hungry. They cost a lot of computation. And as far as coding, it's not like a huge deal. It's not like some like breakthrough innovation. They're just writing a basic set of agreements or arrangements in a scripting language. So, you know, it's like a basic shell script to, verify the signature of a document or whatever. Like, maybe that hasn't been possible before, but after you set up a shell scripting arrangement and you write a little script to do that, it's not like some huge innovation or anything. It's just, you can write script, like you have kind of the basic building blocks to put this together. And then, you know, you write a little script to save yourself some time having to do this manually. And then you can replicate it. You copy and paste it and a whole bunch of people can do it. But aside from just being data heavy, just being a huge computational data and, you know, validation cost, just a hog when it comes to that kind of stuff, it's also that privacy sucks. Like, yeah, we can write an open script and post it to the blockchain with, you know, this big fancy contract. But in order to validate it and settle who the correct outcome, like the correct recipient of the output of this contract, is you have to tell the whole world what's going on. Like, it has to all be visible so that the correct party gets the payout. So it has to be totally open to observers in this sort of a setup, to just have like this built into the base chain's scripting language, is that, well, everybody can see the script. And then the third significant problem is the involvement of the oracle. Like, you have to trust the oracle, right? So not only is the contract public, but so are the interactions with it. who's interacting with it, how it can be interacted with. Assuming an adversarial environment, this is pretty dangerous. If you could keep the Oracle contracts private, what the possible outcomes are, or who the Oracle even is in the situation, or if there is even an Oracle, like, is this even something that has this contract that could be attacked? So there's not something for them to observe and look at and wonder, how could I attack this? It looks arbitrary. It just looks like a multi-sig. When we're talking about DLCs, it just looks like a generic multi-sig on the chain. So there's not some explicit set of instructions where you're looking for, in an adversary environment where a hacker might be looking for, how do I insert myself? Who do I need to get in the way of? Which Oracle do I need to attack? What are all the possible outcomes? Can I flood this, that, you know, et cetera, et cetera? Somebody who is not strictly a party to the agreement doesn't know what the agreement even is. So the contract itself, all the stipulations and all the paths can be kept private so that only the involved parties, rather than the whole world, even knows what sort of branches or outcomes or, you know, potential attack vectors could even be. And the beauty of something like DLCs, or bringing that to the Bitcoin blockchain, is that rather than going back to our 2 of 3 multi-sig agreement, we now have something where an Oracle doesn't even have to be involved, where they don't even have to know that the contract is taking place at all. The Oracle can simply be there to attest to an outcome, but they do not have to interact or be a party to the agreement or to the contract, whatever. So let's say, like, an NFL football game is that the judging or the NFL, like, institution itself publishes and signs with a, you know, PG, like, with a known key, the outcomes of these games. And we can essentially, knowing what is going to be doing the signing in these agreements, like signing the outcome, is that we can bet on it and have them be the Oracle, have them be the ultimate arbiter as to whether or not my team won or your team won. But we don't have to give them a key in the agreement. We use something called an adapter signature. So with the public key of the NFL in this situation, we can know, based on either outcome A, my team wins, or outcome B, your team wins, we can know what the details that are going to be of that signature prior to it being published. And what we can do is that we can tweak the signatures required for our multisig. We put this in a 2 of 2 multisig with outputs, with basically a redeeming transaction that requires either outcome A, the signature from outcome A, to be mixed with the current signing, or outcome B, so that without the signature, we can't actually redeem the funds, unless there's, you know, just some time lock or whatever, basically the fail-safe clause, the insurance clause, just like the Lightning Network. You know, you either have both signatures or nothing. You have both signatures and or this other explicit piece of information that we know this Oracle is going to publish, and therefore it can be the third signature, quote-unquote, without them signing the transaction. They sign the piece of information that we know is going to be part of this thing, which is either Team A or Team B. And here's the thing. They publish one piece of data, and thousands of markets, millions of people all over the world can make individual, permissionless bets without any other person involved, with no arbiter, no institution, no exchange, no service, no nothing, just a wallet that can write these sorts of contracts. And that NFL, the NFL institution can, you know, sign the agreement or signed the outcome that it was Team A that won, and every single one of those contracts across the world is immediately able to be settled to the person who made their signature or wrote their transaction under the condition that outcome A had to be signed. And the other person can't redeem it at all. And there was nobody to ask. The NFL didn't have to set up some giant service that allowed everybody to log in. There was no exchange saying this is what you can and can't do. There's no explicit jurisdiction saying you're not allowed to take this bet and you have to have, you know, a government license or a permission or whatever the hell it is. Two people can do it independently and have the Oracle's outcome that neither one of them knows can be the final say in whether outcome A or B was what happened in the real world. Because that's the ultimate problem here, right? Is that how do we get information in the real world to affect something in the blockchain? How do we get the time chain? How do we get Bitcoin itself? It doesn't know anything about the world. It doesn't know what the price of Bitcoin is. It doesn't know where it is when you're signing a key. It doesn't care about any of that stuff. Anything that is created or validated external to the rules and the Bitcoin system itself is arbitrary. It's just human input. So it has no guarantees whatsoever. This is why when people talk about like, oh, medical records on the blockchain and shipping records and stuff on the blockchain, like those things are still susceptible to the fact that someone has to keep track of the data and then put it on the blockchain. It's still just a human input. It's not really any different that they put it in a database on a computer versus a blockchain database. It doesn't really change it. Like, you can look at editing records and histories on a internal computer and server database too, and you're free to hash that information as much as you want. A blockchain doesn't really change that dynamic a lot. Like, particularly if the hashes are just hashes of the information. Like, you can rehash a whole database, gigabytes and gigabytes of like all years worth of history, and fake it. You're still going to have to just check to make sure that the server wasn't edited. It doesn't change the problem of human input. So that's the Oracle problem, is how do we trust someone? And one of the big ways to actually mitigate that trust is to have that attestation essentially be why we trust them. If they're not a party to the agreement at all, well, then they're kind of independent. They don't necessarily care or even know all the people that may be depending, like writing contracts based on their information. But SurredBits actually has, like in their posts about this, they talk about like, you know, what this means, what you can do with it. And one of the clever things actually is that they can basically, quote unquote, sell their reputation. They can have paid APIs to basically pull that that signed information in order to execute these contracts. And so they can actually pretty easily monetize a non-participatory role into all of these agreements and contracts, just like an exchange has a paid API to get price data. Well, that's what you do. People have access, like they pay for access, and you know, this is something that's perfect for Lightning because you have micro paying for individual pieces of data or individual streams or something like that, and you get access to the API, you get their explicit signature and what the price is, and then that's used to finish out your adapter signature and get a full valid signature. And then on the blockchain, you post the transaction and it just looks like a regular two of two transaction. It doesn't even expose the fact that there was this contract behind it. It just settles the keys that were already there. And that's the beauty of really building this out, is that this is the ability to put all of this behind a single signature. And there's a quote by, which obviously Taproot and Schnorr go even further steps into making that really a reality in the full sense of it's just one signature. Even the multi-sig itself is one signature. The time lock is just one signature. Like, that really takes it to a whole nother level. Whereas this is I'm basically manipulating the individual signatures. But this is kind of the beauty of Bitcoin and the restrictions as to what building blocks to use. Andrew Polstra has a great talk about Taproot and Schnorr, which I can't quite remember which one it's on. I think he's probably mentioned this on a couple of podcasts too that I've listened to. But that, you know, innovation in cryptography, like building new cryptographic systems, isn't like a huge problem. Like after you have the cryptographic building blocks, you don't really change those much. You don't change ECDSA. You just start writing code around it. But to have a restriction, a constraint that says, all right, well, now you can start building with this, but the only thing that you can output is a key and a signature. That you can't have like a contract. You can have like this huge list of like trees and or like architecture of an agreement and all of this stuff. The output just has to be a signature. And he talks about how like that's kind of insane to even suggest that, you know, you could build something like that in that environment. Like that's the opposite thinking of that, like, oh, well, you start with signatures and keys and stuff, and then you can build all of this stuff. But what about building all of these things where the output itself is just a signature and a key? Like building before the keys rather than after, in a sense. Maybe that's a little bit off, but hopefully the analogy comes across. But he said that, you know, if you went to a cryptographer with like that level of constraint or restriction, they'd be like, what are you, crazy? That doesn't make any sense. But that's kind of the situation we have in Bitcoin. And that's where some of these amazing breakthroughs are actually coming with, you know, adapter signatures. And I mean, like we've even figured out that you can essentially do what Schnorr does with ECDSA, that we could technically get the music thing where all signatures just combine to one signature with multi-party ECDSA, which is a completely novel thing, if I'm not mistaken. This is something that we've just kind of figured out because of the constraints of Bitcoin. It's like, holy crap, we can do this with ECDSA. It takes a lot more interaction up front. Like there's a lot of trade-offs with it, but it's possible. And that's like one of those things that with like the ossifying of the protocol itself, like I'm not too worried if we end up there, because I think there's still so much innovation to explore just in that realm of thing that that we can still build amazing tools and get amazing privacy with the restrictions that we're in. But I think we're going to get Taproot and we're going to get Schnorr and all of these great things, we'll get a whole lot of extra benefits and privacy and cost savings. Just because it's, you know, not contentious and we're still early enough to be able to pull that off. You know, I'm running the hell out of that client. But going back to DLCs, how is this possible that we can, you know, put in these Oracle contracts and we have these adapter signatures in which we can write these other clauses into these seemingly simple contracts, these contracts that don't have any of this stuff and don't broadcast any of that to the chain, and just look like a plain ass 2 of 2 multisig? And now we can do this? Like they actually did this DLC with Nicola Doria and there was one with Blockstream with SherdBits. I'll link to their blog so that you guys can check it out if you want to. I tried to simplify or compress everything in their introduction and then 4-part series about DLCs into this episode. So it's just kind of a general overview of what they talk about, but they've got a lot more on it. They've got like 15 or some odd blog posts about DLCs and some of the other things and really going into it. But this is the kind of thing that allows atomic options contracts, like futures contracts and stuff on Bitcoin and the Bitcoin price that don't have an exchange. You know, that's what Uniswap is, except it's DLCs like are the ability to write these contracts or whatever without a huge attack surface, without like a huge data bloat, and without having to print a whole bunch of shitcoin tokens and have like a new one for every stupid thing. I mean, that's the appeal to all this stupid yield stuff, is that like you're just printing shitcoins to pay people to lock up shitcoins. I mean, oh my god, it's such a mess. But I can't get one person to explain to me what value is being produced outside of people getting paid ridiculous percentages in new tokens to do this, to play this game. And it's like, well, who's borrowing? Who's paying these enormous percentages for what value? But, you know, whatever. Don't want to go down that rabbit hole because that's a whole like 9 episodes of like what the hell is going on over there. But let's say you just want an atomic swap, like futures contract. You want a futures contract that's, you know, on a decentralized exchange that's on a BISC or just built into some sort of wallet or something that you could have a 6 months month futures contract that just settles automatically, and then you have to put up some collateral in case you're wrong, and you get the collateral of the other participant, the participant on the other side of the exchange, and it's done without a third party, without an exchange, with just running off of, you know, Coinbase's paid API, and they don't know that you've got a contract or a, you know, futures position on it, and you don't have to ask them, you don't have to KYC AML, and you can write as complex one as you want, as long as, like, with the recognition that if something goes wrong, you typically have to broadcast the details of the insurance clause, quote unquote, in it, the outcome clause, if you don't have the two of two or the correct, like, adapter signature. That's where you have like a little bit of a loss of privacy if something goes wrong in it. Just like the penalty clause in Lightning Network, it exposes a lot more information. This is much more simplified as soon as we get things like Taproot, and those problems are, a lot of those issues are mitigated. But here's the beauty of it. Here's the real beauty of it. The underlying, like, holy crap, this is amazing. It just uses multi-sig and time locks. Those are the only two tools needed on the time chain on Bitcoin. So you know the attack surface, and all the complexity in the contract is kept private. You know that it's going to settle based on those stipulations. You know exactly what the potential problem or the potential settlement is. And it's totally agnostic. You can use this same app, same thing for everything. It's the one thing that everything has is multi-sig and time locks. So you can build it everywhere. It's just like with Lightning. Lightning doesn't know that it's on or care that it's on Bitcoin. Lightning is everywhere. And you can atomic swap between one and the other. It's blockchain agnostic. Same with these DLCs. These are universal. And it only requires two very secure, very well-known, very widely used building blocks, time locks and multi-sig, just like Lightning, in order to put them together and make them possible. And it seems like something that I feel like on the surface it seems kind of minor, but I think this is a big deal, and this is cool to see this happening. I was kind of wondering what Nicola Dori, I didn't know that Nicola Dori was working on this until I started reading the Sherd bits. And some of the things that they were talking about this. So it was only recently that I was like, oh, that's what Nicholas is doing over there. And I kind of hope to be reading more from SherdBits just because they are really, really doing awesome work. But like I said, sometimes their blog posts are better. They're better written, you know, but they dig into some really, really fun technical stuff that, for people who are unfamiliar with this, it's really fun to talk about and explain. So I'm definitely going to link to that as well as the original Bitcoin Magazine article so that you can, you know, go check that out. And they've got a couple links of like the repo if you want to get involved in the actual like DLCs and like, you know, join the community and talk to them and like really dig into what you can do with these things because they're here now. They're like, the book is open and now people are starting to play and can build things. And I'm very, very excited to see where this goes. This is one of those things that, you know, after you get that base standard, you get into the environment where you can start sorting out what the standard is, what the implementation details are going to be so that everybody can talk on the same language when it comes to DLCs. Man, the number of things that you can start building with it, like the new things that you could put on BISC that weren't possible before, and how to take advantage of it. Like, this could be a big deal. And I want people to know about it if it's something that they're interested in or think that they could build something with. So that is DLCs. A huge thank you to SherrodBits, a huge thank you to Ben Carman for writing this piece, and a huge thank you to Bitcoin Magazine for making it available, because it brought it back on into my attention just when I was scanning the page and like reading through a lot of the articles. I was like, oh crap, that's right, I forgot. It's just, there's so much stuff going on right now. Strike just added on-chain payments now, so you can send to a Bitcoin QR, a Lightning QR, doesn't matter, it works. So there's so many things with Lightning, I just forget that there are these whole other projects being worked on that are going to add massive functionality and capability to this system. And Taproot makes it all so much better. I'm excited. I'm super bullish. So loving it. Thank you guys so much for listening. Don't forget to check out Hexa Wallet. They are supporting the show now, and they have an awesome tool. Like I said, they've got a 3 of 5 Shamir secret sharing. So it is a seedless backup. You do not have to write down 24 words and memorize them. You need to keep up with 3 of 5 things which you can share with people, other people who have the Hexa wallet. If you want me to hold one of your 5 keys, I would love to be one of the people in it. Hit me up on Twitter and I'll be a contact on your Hexa wallet, and you can share one of your 5 things with me. I do a very good job of keeping my backups. So hopefully if it ever comes to it and you need one of your backups, I can be there and help out, and you don't have to trust me. And that is really cool. So check out Hexa Wallet on the Google Play Store, Apple App Store, and or just go to hexawallet.io and hit me up if you're playing with it and you want me to join in with you. All right. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. The future is coming fast. So many developments, so many new technologies. We may even be entering the era of smart contracts on Bitcoin. So stay tuned. Keep listening to Bitcoin Audible. And until next time, take it easy, guys. This has been a 111 production, and you were listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Crypto Economy Network.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.